Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. Your front row.
For the Fiat Ducato with up to 15 cubic metres of cargo capacity. Move with more grunt.
Welcome to the Saturday Rub.
For Macca's Little Wins app.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh yes, we're down at Simmons Stadium in Geelong for the Cats and the D's. That's coming up a little later on, but plenty of entertainment prior to that. Paul Roos speaks to us, Gillon McLaughlin speaks to us, Scott Selwood speaks to us. That's to come as well. We have a look at last night's game between Adelaide and the West Coast Eagles. And I always worry when I walk into the Triple M box prior to the Saturday Rub and Spud and Bristle aren't looking at each other. They're looking in completely different directions. Damo's kept a pair of sunnies on the whole preparation, which means he's hiding something. The producer's grabbing people and getting them out the back to listen to audio. So it is on in Geelong as we get ready for this final home and away Saturday Rub. And we one day, Bristle, need to get a body language expert into this box to tell us exactly what of this means.
If he were here today, he'd say you've got problems.
Yes. There's no question of that.
You're not a team at the moment, I can tell you that.
But... And you're leading the splinter groups, bud.
No, I'm not, but... I was away for a couple of days. How did the ratings go, by the way?
Exceptional.
Yeah, here we go.
The marquee slot. What do you mean, how did it go? No, why do you even need to ask that question, Spud?
You talk about body languages. There's a couple of boxes next to us. Tim Lane and Andy Marr and those guys, they didn't have to open the door to get in. They looked a bit flat.
How did they get in?
Well, they slinked in under the door, Brian. They just sort of, they just look flat. They look like they've got an anvil on their head. So it's fair to say we went all right on a Saturday, JB. Yeah,
is it a rhetorical question, Damo, one which you ask, but you already know the answer to?
Well, you seem to know that before they even come out.
How we go? Well, Spud, I don't know why you ask a question you already know the answer to.
Yeah, I know, but I want to know,
just
did we win?
Just complete ratings dominance.
Was it comprehensive on a Saturday?
10 plus.
Everything, Spud.
Everything.
Come on.
Oh, well, that's fair enough, too.
Well, then the millions that listen to Triple M Football feel good about themselves. Because they know that they're with the majority.
Well, it's good to be able to talk. Because I sent a text out last night to someone to give me a ride down. Because I'm getting a ride with Duck to Ballarat for a charity night. I sent a text. No one got back to me. Because someone delivered me down here.
Yep.
But at 10 o'clock, I walked out the drive.
Bristol's coming from Montegita. I'm coming from Hawthorne. You live in Brighton, so there's no option for either of
anyway,
us.
Anyway,
you don't
Warrior.
Like it.
All I got was Warrior. A minute after the text, I can. Dropped me off. I said, mate, you're picking me up at my place. So I had to get him to drive 10K back to Brighton.
I did go and pick him up.
Then
I copped him for an hour and a half.
No, then he started talking to me. I just put my earphones on. I'd had enough. It was real boring. Like, I was really up and about. The hour from my house to here.
Wore you out.
Was, and you know what?
Oh, no.
He's got a manual. Seriously. And he went 97Ks an hour, BT.
A manual Volvo.
Oh, I know what it is.
Subaru.
But anyway, you know you got the speed limit down here is 100. You normally go 102.
Yeah, 120.
97. Yeah. 97. We had 450 cars pass us from Melbourne to
that
Geelong.
That is not true.
I had a bit of luck today. I was held up by a couple of cars with the coppers coming the other way.
That's the only way you avoid a prison.
No, drive within the speed limit.
Yes, exactly right.
You didn't want to pick Spud up, though, did you, JB? You left that task to me.
Hawthorne, I'm a good 40 minutes the wrong way.
If you had lived in the same street as him, you wouldn't have picked him up.
I've done all the heavy lifting this year. I thought at least the leader would say, I'll pick you up, Spud, and we'll just have a chat. No. Like the good old days, we used to go down together.
Well, that's because I lived in Brighton, Spud.
Yeah, but there used to be four of us.
About
all
4 years.
I lived next door to you.
Yeah, but we used to get sandwiches.
Coffees
we'd have coffee
and
on
we'd
the
talk
run
to
and
each
the
other
group in a car. Now we just go on our own way.
I'm in a different suburb.
It doesn't matter. We used to always meet at the Westgate.
You're a different space too, Jim.
Gaz used to give us a very wide berth in these situations, Bristle, because he was Hawthorne. Now that I'm in the same suburb, I understand where he was coming from.
But we used to get a couple of frothies on the way home. And
if you live south of the city, you're out of business.
We used to like each other.
We just drive down together. What about a bit of carpooling?
A whole different setup down there.
Well, you're a different setup, JB.
You're on your own down there, you two.
You've changed, JB. You're just, I don't know. They say I'm unhinged. I'm yet to work you out, JB.
That's fun.
You are betting.
Wouldn't we like to go back to the day JB arrived in Melbourne? And just you say he's changed.
Oh,
God,
right.
Gracious me.
He had a
very similar, Spud.
He had a lunchbox and his sandwiches in the lunchbox.
Very similar, Bristle.
He'd walk in and he'd say, righto, what do you want to do, boys? Now he walks in and says, this is the agenda.
This is the way we do it, right? What have we got? Come on, now. Let's open up.
I did that till we got our first book, Bristle.
This box is now called the Temple of Jim.
And now, I know you blokes are ready to go, so I'm going to have to hold you back for 15 minutes until we can get to exactly what you... I can see a piece of equipment on the table here, which excites me, because we haven't seen the trumpet all year, nearly. So someone's obviously got ahead of themselves.
No, it could be trumpet or glass eye, but I'll let the listeners decide
that. Right. Well, we'll get to that. But last night, Spud, Damo and Bristol, we saw the West Coast Eagles go to the Adelaide Oval, which is close to the toughest road trip in football at the moment, to take on the Crows. And not only one, Brian, they gave them a poleaxing.
Yeah, they did. And it was great to see. I didn't think West Coast were capable of delivering what they did. Someone like Giles comes into the side. All the talk is about Nat Nui and they can't win. And Giles comes in and he plays an okay game. By the way, guys like that, Spud, are only capable of playing one or two games at that level before they drop off. No.
Really?
I would say that Giles is only capable of the level in which he played last night for one or two games. It's not able to be sustained. That's why...
Upon what
he's
do
not
you base that, BT? Because he's coming cold and he's now got another week off.
On the fact he's not a great player. I don't want to make a big deal of it. It's just a fact. He would have been playing senior footy for a long time if he'd been good enough.
He's pulled apart a man who was regularly talked about as an All-Australian candidate,
Damo,
Sam Jacobs.
One of those little things that when you come into a side and you're not of the quality of, say, Nat Nui, and you come into the side...
Not many are.
No, but let's say you're average ruckman even. And he's not of that quality. Otherwise, he would have been playing footy constantly over the last 10 years, and he's not. He's just not at the level all of the time.
But he's been at the level required to be at four footy clubs over a long period of time.
No, he's been on the edge. He's been what I would call a bits player.
He's a backup.
A backup ruckman.
He's a backup ruckman. That's
and
what
the
he
reason
is.
He's a backup ruckman is because he's not good enough. And that's what I mean about having the ability and the skill set to sustain the level that he needs to.
Well, I think we all went into the game thinking Sloan was a big loss for Adelaide and Nick Natanui is a big loss for West Coast. But I think Giles, to give him a little bit more credit, Brian, I agree with you, is the fact that the ruckman, he actually halved the contest with Jacobs.
Yeah, I'm not denying that. No, how long can he do it for?
Well, it doesn't really matter if you get their midfield like Gaff and Shuey, like Sheed. Their midfield, that was the hardest of run.
They smashed Adelaide's midfield.
He was the best player on the ground in that club's best win of the season.
Nah, Gaff was best on the ground.
Yeah. Oh, look, okay, give him the second best player on the ground.
No, I'll put him best on the ground if you want, but it doesn't mean he can repeat it.
Therefore,
cool. I thought Kennedy was pretty good.
Give us West Coast's last four wins, Brian.
They have won against Fremantle, GWS, and Hawthorn.
And now Adelaide.
And now Adelaide. Yep. So their form, they've hit the... And by all reports, the conditioning staff was all about finals. And I know they were flat what they lose their first five or six games.
And also, Spud, Lever, Talia, and Hardigan were turned around time and time again by Darling and Kennedy. I heard Wayne Carey say on the coverage last night that there was just that aerial supremacy at both ends of the ground. McGovern at one end, you know, and Kennedy and Likes at the other end of the ground. Their aerial supremacy was great last night.
Jenkins, Betts, Walker and Lynch averaged seven goals between them.
Well, they kicked one?
Two. Betts won and Jenkins won. And JB and I were having a chat about it. The over-the-top that Jenkins gets and Betts...
Hey.
West Coast defence were outstanding. They didn't allow. They always had a wicketkeeper over the back and they were, you know, hailing the cab, they call it,
Jenkins,
down the goal square.
For me, had two moments last night, maybe a couple of others, that you don't want to have as footballers. And that is when you look at the oncoming traffic to see whether you're going to be hurt or not. I reckon he had a couple of very iffy, thought of body first before winning ball first moments last night, and I thought looked pretty ordinary.
But Bristol, we've been saying, and I didn't see them, but I'm not doubting for a second what you saw. We've been saying now, on this show for I reckon 3 months, how the hell is this bloke getting mobs out the back? I understand Eddie Betts getting people out the back
because
his speed and he can turn on a dime and you know, he's got that dynamic movement. I'm not saying Jenkins' work rate isn't exceptional because it is, but he is 6 foot six. And what they did last night, even on telly, you could see it, Spud, they had this bloke sitting 20 metres behind and bumping him up the ground. And as soon as Jenkins turned around, he just stayed goal side of him.
Yeah,
and
it was bumper
bar. Why haven't teams done that all year? I don't get it.
No, it just says a lot about McGovern and the way he's matured as a footballer. And young Barras did an outstanding job as well. And Hearn and Shepherd.
To answer JB's question, part of that could be they feel they can exploit him by getting off him. So if they're 5 or 10 metres in front, they get possession of the ball and they can go. They can make him work, draw him up the
Which
ground.
Which is the Western Bulldogs way, isn't it? To sit in front as a defender.
Sit in front, draw him up the ground, away from the goals. A lot would be thinking that. But you're right. He's got out the back so many times that, you know.
Especially there. Well, because of the dimensions of that ground, and I just thought West Coast, well, firstly, they had the midfield dominant spud, so therefore it was coming in sort of dirty into the Adelaide forward line, which makes a huge difference. Yep. And the other side of the ball, again, Telly's hard to see, but the midfield of the West Coast delivered it on a platter to Kennedy and Darling because they were able to hold and hold until they hooked back and approached the ball carrier.
And a great example for the media to remember that games and premierships and finals aren't won by one person.
No, they're not.
They're won by teams.
And their midfield, as I said, their collective group is a midfield. And what you're talking about there, JB, is Luke Shuey. Some of his ball passing to Josh Kennedy. Mm. Josh Kennedy should go and shout him lunch this week. It was just three on a platter, Brian. Just four to the centre. Little 25-metre darter.
The other one who kicked it really well early was, and we were talking about it before, but Lewis Jetta. Couple of kicks early, which is superb. I know he didn't do a lot last night. He did a little bit more last week than he did this week, but his kicking to Kennedy on the lead was absolutely sensational. Hit off Lacroix at one stage as well. He was impressive the way
the timing of this campaign by Adam Simpson has been quite extraordinary, hasn't it?
So
against the top eight teams, the first five times they'd come up against them this season, they were losses. Now, they've now won their past four against the top eight teams. And BT, it's that selection of Jeddah against the fly. They dropped him three times this year, but he backed him in, didn't he, 2 weeks ago. And he brought him in with no real reason. He thought, okay, if we're going to have a real crack at a premiership, we need him in. It's the reason we got him. We want him in. And he's persevered with him. He's had trust in him. He had trust to take Joles to Adelaide last night, and I know what you were saying.
Made him hungry, and that's what they're doing with Stringer at the Western Bulldogs at the moment. Another week out this week, he'll come back prime for the finals. Make no mistake, a very, very similar situation. They know, you're right, Damo, they know that to win a premiership, they can win these games in between, but to win a premiership, they need Lewis Jetta running strongly and his kicking skills. They need both of those things.
Well, they went out of their way to get him last year.
Yep. I always look at the other end of the ground too, both ends. And as you said, Talia got touched up last night. Darling, the actual scoreline of 29 points flattered Adelaide because Darling kicked 2-4. That could have been quite easily 5-1. Anyway, you'll take that.
To his credit, the two he kicked were after the four.
Yeah,
so,
they were.
I mean, at least he's finished the game on a positive.
Yeah, but Barras, what a great story. You know, you think about Eric McKenzie. He did the knee after 2014, best and fairest winner, all out last year. He's struggled this year, and all of a sudden, Barras has come in and just gone bang. You know, and you can see that Jerry McGovern's had an impact on him the way he played. He's quick, he's strong. And he used his body well for a youngster.
And first time I've sat home for a while and watched it on TV, and I just admired both the coaches in this game, Pike and Simpson. Just, I always felt when there was a shot of them, they just oozed control. Mm. They oozed, you know, I've got an answer for that, we'll try this. You could just see it written all over their faces. Two really good guys that are coaching really well at the moment.
Get to them too, because they both had a chat about the bye, but just the ramifications, Damo, of this game are huge. Yep. Adelaide, you've got to think, have cost themselves a home final first week, which is massive. Mm. So they're now going to have to, by the look of it, travel to Melbourne to take on Geelong at the MCG, which is so much harder than hosting either Geelong or anyone else, Hawthorn at home.
Yes.
So that's for them. The West Coast Eagles will rue. They're one game short, I reckon.
Yeah,
They won one more game in the year.
Yeah.
They're at home and have got the, well, maybe not at home, they've got the double chance, which
they could still get on the back of last night.
But
they need some more extraordinary results.
They need so many things to go their way. So
we thought we had it set, didn't we? We thought that the Thursday final was going to be Adelaide Crows versus Geelong. The very first game of this last round has thrown that out the window. And basically, we're not going to get bogged down on what could happen here. But other than to say
could be another upset.
There's lots of clubs that could finish second, and there's lots of other clubs that could finish as low as sixth or seventh. So, and that's just not simplifying what the situation is. It's just not worth our while to get bogged down on the nitty gritty because it's all dependent upon results.
Well, your turn, JB North. It becomes sort of interesting tonight that they don't really get an advantage by winning tonight. They could end up playing West Coast if they finish fifth.
They might get an advantage by losing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's probably a nothing game in the end, but you can't worry about it. You've just got to put your best
form out
there.
That's just an anomaly of the draw.
Yeah, I know.
And that's likely. Let's say GWS, who are favoured to win the game tonight, win it.
Yep.
You know, that's obviously not what I want to have happen, but let's say that does happen.
Yep.
Then highly likely North Melbourne and GWS will play again first week of the finals. And which is amazing because the same thing happened last year. North Melbourne played Richmond 2 weeks in a row.
Hmm.
But the interesting bit with that is now that Adelaide won't host that first final, that's likely to be the Thursday night game, I'm suggesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Because it's got to be interstate the first
final. Well, I reckon they could swing that Sydney Swans game around to that Thursday night.
But are they going to have a bit long? Oh, yeah, because you've got the break. Yeah, I'm going to say they have a long enough break.
The only thing is, I think they like the crowd possibilities in either Perth or Adelaide for a Thursday game. Probably not Sydney.
Not going to happen. Yeah. You can rule that now. Yeah.
Unless West Coast do host that first final, you might see them play Western Bulldogs.
Unless they host it as a fifth place team. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's normally the 1v4, 2v3, the first two finals to give them the best chance of recovering the following week. So it'll be...
Well, that's why.
We'll
see. But anyway, let's have a listen because the bye is massive now. We haven't...
Spud just pointed out it's 1v4 and 2v3.
No,
you're saying they'll be the first two finals, Brian. First weekend. Let's have a listen to the two coaches from last night assessing. This is brand new territory for footy. We've never had a bye going into the finals. Who have we got first, Simo or Don Pike on the bye?
I think with the week's break, it's going to be an interesting year because I think what it'll do is it'll change a little bit that, you know, you'll have sides probably fresher for that first week of the finals. So, it's such an even... probably an even competition, regardless of position. If you look at the ladder, there's one game between first and seventh. So that suggests to me that all sides are very capable. And we'll go into the finals with that belief and that confidence that we can have an impact, and that's what we'll plan to do.
We'll take it. Yeah, we've got some sore boys. So I think they'll work through that in their own way. But what would have happened if there wasn't a bye? Some clubs have rested 10 players again this week, so then we would have all been complaining about it. So at the moment, I think every club's just reflecting on their own situation. So ours is we'll rest some of our players.
So there's Adam Simpson and Don Pike on the bye. Very, very interesting. And I reckon he's right. Because there are two or three teams that can't move, there would have been significant resting of players this week, Damo. If there wasn't a bye, well, teams would have put five or six out of their side and said, righto, let's just let it sit.
I don't know, because there is still a fight for the double chance, and West Coast has proven that last night. As a result of what they did last night, they can, under a certain scenario, still finish fourth. So North Melbourne's the only team that couldn't move on the ladder per se, and I think that my view on this by Jim. I think it's an absolute overreaction, and we'll get Gillon McLaughlin's take on it soon.
We're back at Simmons Stadium.
One thing I just want to say. Don't denigrate the EJ Witten game in any
way.
Or what it stands for.
in
men's health.
That's it. And Spud, see if you can get one of these out without completely slaughtering it.
Don't discourage people from attending the men's health ideas.
Everyone listening, just put down your mower, put down your... just listen to this because...
But take a breath, Spud. Just take a breath and regroup before
I heard
talk.
Something during the week that I thought was a bit harsh. Robert Walls on some other show having a crack at our mate BT. Have a listen to this.
I'm going to throw another brick. And
there's a big bag of bricks here.
This goes to Brian Taylor.
Brian Taylor, BT.
Yeah, and I hope I get him fair and square because I don't want him coming after me either. Concentrate on calling the game, BT. You're a good caller. Don't try to be funny because you're as funny as a toothache.
That's a hard thing to say. As funny as a toothache.
Yeah, while KB's sewing his sides up, it really wasn't that funny, Wallsy. But anyway, I thought it was a bit
take
harsh,
KB. Should take a leaf out of Wallsy's book and be as boring as batshit
as he is. I agree. But I'm sticking up for you after I heard that. I thought, no, that can't be right. But then, JB, last Saturday on the rub about 12:07, have a listen to this attempted humour.
Last Saturday, 12:07 PM.
So we're at the colonoscopy clinic just down here in East Melbourne. We're waiting to go, and there's about 10 people in the room. You're all looking at each other going, you're having one too. Oh, boy. and anyway, we've got the cameraman there to shoot it for Channel 7. And one of the guys sitting over in the corner there waiting for his colonoscopy said, shit, I didn't know the camera was going to be that big.
So, Brian, is it true?
Had a 4-inch lens on it.
That's not too bad, Spud.
So, JB, when you get one that's not too bad, you probably put it in the drawer.
Hang on, that was quite funny.
You probably put it in the drawer and you think,
that
maybe...
That was very funny, Spud.
Maybe, with functions going on during the September...
That better not be all you got.
No, no, it's not, because I thought it was about as funny as a kick in the pills, to be brutally honest. I thought it was just real boring. 3-8, that stuff that he dragged over from the other station. We were there for 5 years. He's starting to seep it in through the doors here. We need to eradicate it, JB, because I didn't think it was too good. And anyway, I'm driving around yesterday morning, and as you know, I've been criticised with the Brad Alton's joke, the pill, and I thought, just put it to bed and go to the middle of New South Wales where no one's heard it before.
Under the pump.
But he's gone not only on the same station, but have a listen to this yesterday.
Yesterday, 7:45 a.m.
It was interesting. I was in the waiting room having to wait for the colonoscopy. There's about 10 other guys in there all waiting to have the camera inserted and have a quick look. And the camera crew walked into this full waiting room. There were about 10 guys in there. They had the big cameras they used, the big 4-inch lenses, and there were two crews coming in. One guy said at the top of his voice in front of everyone, "Jesus, I didn't know the camera was that big."
Can't believe you've gone with that, Spud, especially given the fact they asked me the question.
No, Brian, you just don't go with the same boring joke.
Spud, is
two
that
weeks,
it?
That's it.
Please pay the punch on.
No. It's real class. Oh, crap, Brian. Absolute crap. And I know.
Let's roll the punchline.
That is the punchline. It wasn't funny the first time.
Spud.
How was it going to be funny the second time,
what
Brian?
What was the punchline?
Yeah. Oh, go to the retirement home villages and run that sort of crap. Not on the highest rating show on a Saturday, Brian. Just get it back to 3AW, Brian.
Grown man.
Okay. Hello? 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 Could you just roll the punchline for Spud?
No.
Oh, Spud, you've gone nuts 2 weeks in a row now.
Brian,
you've completely lost the plot.
Walsey was right, mate. You
completely lost it.
I think it's a suspension. If you run, you've got about 30 functions over September. If you run with that boring crap, everyone will get up out of the seats and walk out, Brian.
Spud, honestly.
You put production into that.
I did, but I thought
you dressed it up as good as you can
to one of our booths and actually put production.
And you've edited out the question that they actually asked me.
I spent half the day yesterday
to relay the story.
You did.
Doing that. I had to do a lot of things at
you've
home.
You've had a shocker.
No, I haven't, Brian.
You know, remember your career when you first started and you couldn't. Well, you didn't get it done. And it's a bit like that at the moment. You're just starting off in radio and you're not quite getting it done.
Brian, you admit that is as boring.
You're like the golfer. You're taking windies at the moment.
No, boring is batshit, Brian. That
terrible.
Is real rib ticket. You might be able to do it over there with Tim Lane and Timmy Lane over there. The other Sam McClure. They might laugh and chortle and break a couple of ribs with that crap.
Spud,
distinct from over here where you don't stop talking.
Spud, I want you to be honest. Are you disappointed with where that one ended up?
Well, I am, because you are a skinny little prick, because you said you'd go with me.
That's
a sweet
piss.
Don't tip it on me.
No, well,
I had no idea what you were doing.
But I need a bit of support, seriously.
Spud, it's official. It's official.
Look,
you've lost the plot.
No, I haven't lost the plot.
Purple's giving you nothing. You drove for an hour on the car with
you. I just feel whatever I bring to the table at the moment, JB, you do the complete opposite.
He drove for an hour in the car with you. Where was his support?
You're a double agent. You're a double agent. Warrior.
Well,
we went through that for 15 minutes in the car.
No.
And you said this is going to be
had
one of your greatest.
Had we gone through with it for 15 minutes, it might have worked.
He's giving you nothing,
you said it's going to be one of my greatest
funny.
Days. And just on that, Warrior, you be very, very careful.
I can't be working with crackpots.
Remember this time last year? The Brownlow?
Oh,
Warrior
no.
went to the toilets and Luke Beveridge nearly squeezed his head to an inch of its life.
Yes.
You've become a real smacker.
Now, there's round two just around the corner. As we know, there's a lot of functions. Hmm. And Brad Scott is obviously a little bit prickly at the moment.
Yeah,
he's prickly with two people in particular.
I did say to Warrior to give him a very wide berth.
And
even after
David King, better be watching. He might get one in his little wide midriff at the moment.
Mm. Even after last night's show, Jim, I got a call on the way home, and then I've got another call on the way down here today to remind me to stay well clear. Maybe a 2 kilometre radius.
I think you're overthinking and overplanning.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely some overplanning happening.
No, there's not, because
that's the production. We don't normally have production added to bits.
The Virgin All-Australian team on Thursday night.
When you take time to get things done, Spud, they've got to be really slick. That was really dry.
You blokes have had a chat on your own.
They have, haven't they? Look at them.
That was dry.
And they drove down together.
Not said a word.
That was dry nut rash style thing. That was really just hanging there.
There was something to work with, Spud. You just didn't quite pull it
off. Oh, now Purple's going.
Warrior, hey, now, Thursday night, All-Australian team.
Yep.
Brad Scott will be there.
Yep. Crikey.
Don't go to the toilet when he goes to the toilet. That's all I'll say. Behind closed doors.
I'll go when they're talking.
I think you'll use
the team.
Round two was Beveridge last year, Brad Scott this year. Now, you reckon Luke was pretty hot under the colour?
Luke does scare me. I'm not so worried about Brad.
I think
not so worried about
I think
Brad.
That bottom jaw of Brad might just sort of get a bit square.
Knock on the door.
Jeez. And
Walsey wants to have a cup of tea with his bud.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, just heard Dean Kent out for Melbourne, Matt Jones in. No change for the Cats. We need to get to a break. As I said, we've got Paul Roos to join us.
A solid team in here.
Gil McLaughlin, Scott Selwood, big show before we get to the Cats and the D's. The original club spud in the AFL, these two. First to ever play in the VFL way back in the day.
Powder puff stuff, spud.
Yeah. Spud.
What?
Your mate, I think you need to look to your right, because after an hour in the car, it was a very flat bit of support.
He bored me crapless. He's bored me absolutely crapless, JB Warrior.
He's brought the trumpet in. There's yet to blow it. I wonder what it's going to be blowing for.
Yeah, well, you just keep those cracks to the other 5 years you were at some dead station.
Now, Spud's gone with some stuff. He's prepared and gone into the production studios to get it ready.
It was good.
And
bit of old stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, how'd it go for the Wolfpack Purple?
Well, what's emerging, Jim, is they actually like it when Spud butchers it. The brand needs to lift, though, says Adam. Tristan says, keep your glass eye stuff for the bounce. Don't bore the rub people with it. Georgie Carapas, Spud's year to date. One step forward, 10 steps back.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, there's Seb Goldsmith asks, can the Chief do Saturdays?
That's the sort of reception
really
you get.
Troy Barry, Spud needs a spell.
Let's get on the bounce and see if we can laugh at stuff that's not funny.
Craig Mesger.
Oh, what, the highest rating show on Fox Footy?
Spud's lost the plot ever since Chompers got to him, which is true. I think that is true, actually.
150,000, bro.
All I know is
he wouldn't make it on commercial.
There's a coach. There's a coach of the Melbourne Footy Club that's known you, Spud, for 25 years, and I think he would agree
with me
I say he knew you were never funny.
No, he'll back me up.
You're now attempting to be, and I think he may actually be ready for us over the other side. Michael Roberts is over there. Hello, Robbo, and you've got a very special guest with you.
I have, JB, and Roosie just said that Spud has lost the plot and BT is very, very funny. So that's what it is. But this is all about you, Roosie, today. 11 years as a career and coach, 3 at Melbourne, your last outing. And even Chris Scott said that they'll come out firing for Roosie. I know it doesn't sit well with you, but it is all about you today.
Well, you might say that, but look, for me, it's a normal game. We want to finish off the year really well. And I think it's more about how we present as a team. Last week, we were disappointed, but it's probably a reflection of where we're at, I think, at the moment. You know, we're clearly a 10-win team, and we're just not quite good enough to play finals. So today will be a bit of a test how the players can react and whether they want to go through the line and finish off the season really, really well against a team that's obviously got a lot to play for and very, very talented.
Good luck today, Roosie. I heard you during the week, and you said it with a bit of emotion too, if Melbourne happened to win one in the next 3 or 4 years, you'd be just as pumped as when obviously you're not coach, but just as pumped as what you were at Sydney.
Oh, absolutely, Spud. I think I was really clear on what my role was going to be when I sat down with Peter and Glenn Bartlett, and they were really honest as to where the club was at. So I knew that success in a sense of playing finals and winning premierships wasn't going to happen in the 3 years that I was here. I think the goal was to get to a stage where we felt we could push for being a finals team. That was the clear goal when I first started. You know, 3 years, it's been a tough gig. But so to sit back and watch the development over the next 2 or 3 years, and look, if it does happen, and I know how hard they are to win, but if it did happen, it'd be one of the best days of my footy life, no question about that.
And Paul, I know you don't want to talk about yourself right now. You may post-game, but not right now. I know you don't, but will you be relaxed once it's over and you'll have that holiday you've longed for?
Yeah, I think so. I think that probably the thing that you realise when you get back into it, having been out for 3 years, it is a roller coaster. You know, you ride the bumps and bruises, and your week really revolves around how your team plays. And I suppose it's not, in a sense, it's not a normal life. You know, if you're just relying on winning on the week to have a good week, and if you lose. So that's probably the thing that you're not going to miss, you know, just riding the roller coaster of footy and just being able to go to the football without the pressure of winning and losing, watching the football from afar, enjoying it from a different perspective. So certainly there's a sense of relief at the end of the day because those sort of things are really tough. I mean, it takes a toll on you when your family can see you're grumpy and not happy after you lose. And, you know, so your mood is dictated often by how your team goes.
And again, I know you'll be better equipped and able to deal with this question after the game and in the weeks after it, but do you feel you may end up in a coaching role down the track?
Oh, look, I don't think so, and I know it's hard because I said that again after I finished Sydney, but circumstances always continue to change, and yeah, we're sort of setting ourselves up now. We'll probably head away for a couple of months. I'll be back next year and pretty much here throughout the whole footy season, but yeah, the plan would be probably to spend a couple of months every year in America around about that November-December period, which is obviously pre-season. So, look, it precludes it. Yeah, but I'll be here during the actual season most years hope to stay involved in footy in some capacity.
Hey, Roosie, you're a smart man who's made very good decisions your whole life. I understand you're allowing my nephew and Jack Watts to look after your house for a while. which doesn't smack as a smart decision to me.
Yeah, I'm still looking through their resume and looking for... do you mind if I give you a call?
Just what's the bond, Ruzzi?
The reference?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to get some references and I might make a few phone calls around. I had Watsy come over the other day and Angus used to steal food out of my cupboard anyway when he used to come over and hang out with Tyler. So I'm a little bit more aware of Gussie. And my son, my oldest son, will be with him as well. So I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Hey, Ruzzi, no game to play next week, so you can probably be... Well, you're always forthright, I guess. But who do you think's... Who are you favouring to win this year? Who looks the goods?
Yeah, well, probably, again, better equipped after the game because obviously we're playing a team that's very much in contention... Yeah, to win a premiership, I think it's pretty even. I think we all agree it's as even a competition we've probably seen. Can you win it from outside the top four? I wouldn't think so, but if you can, this is probably a year you might be able to do it. Having said that, you've still got interstate clubs that are going to feature heavily at home. You know, Sydney, you know, West Coast, Adelaide, GWS potentially as well. So it's going to be tough. I think it's really, really even. I'm interested to see Geelong today. Obviously, we haven't played them at all this year. So it'll be interesting to see, yeah, where I rate them in comparison to, you know, to Sydney and Hawthorne and the other teams that we've played.
Paul, what's happened to Jesse Hogan in the second half of this season?
I think it's probably more around his conversion. You know, like we're actually last week, I think he took 14 marks. And as a forward, you're always judged on often, you know, you could have an 8-possession game and kick sort of 4 goals. And then your game's seen as very, very, yeah, good. We've been really happy with his work rate and his intensity and his you know, commitment to team and his team role. But if you probably looked at the conversion, like last week was a good example, 14 marks, if he had a kick, you know, 3 or 4 goals, he's probably near best on ground, you know. So I don't think there's anything wrong with his game other than, you know, forwards are always going to be judged on. And if you look at when forwards have gone through often patches of, with you know, media commentators and people question him, it's often around their goal kicking. Buddy Franklin, I think Tommy Hawkins went through it a bit. Lindsay Thomas, you know, small. Jack Darling we saw last night, I think, kicked 4 or 5 points in a row. Finished off with 2 goals. So I think that's indicative of just the position that he plays.
Ruzzi, this year I think you're pretty well versed to answer this one with Sydney's campaign in 5 and 6. With the bye next week, and then let's say the top 2 teams do win, then they play in the prelim. That's basically 1 game in a month. Like the continuity sometimes, and you saw it with Sydney when you had to play back-to-back, really does help sometimes. And it's a hard one to define, but... It's new territory for the coaches, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it was a big bone of contention at the meeting with Gill. There's no question. The coaches were not in favour of it one little bit. And I know there's massive concerns amongst the coaches that are in the top 8, as there was by the guys like myself outside. So I don't think it's necessary. I don't think any of the coaches felt it was necessary. We're very much in uncharted territory, but it could have a significant impact on one of those top 4 teams, no question.
Got Christian Petrarca in the Bushnells, Ruzzi. He's a big boy. He's a beast of a setup. Does he have to lose weight and get his aerobic side of his game up to a level where he can consistently go inside, or are you happy with the role he's doing now going forward?
Yeah, look, I think when we got him, we always saw him as a forward mid, you know, no question, because of his size. He's very much in the Dustin Martin mould. But look, his running's pretty good, and size-wise, I think what we're seeing now with midfielders, you know, Patrick Cripps is a big fella. You look at Vandenberg, he's having a shot for goal. Yeah, they're now big. Yeah, Gussie's going to be a big kid. Clayton Oliver's going to be big. We've been through, not through the year, I don't know, disrespect Rossi and Frio, but we've been through an era where we got Fife, Mundy, you know, Barlow, 3 huge midfielders that, you know, 10 years ago they were key position players. So, no, the size is not a problem. Just the natural progression in his aerobic running in the pre-season is going to help him. And he'll get in that midfield brigade next year and he'll be a terrific player in that role.
Hey, Ruzzi, we'll let you go. Congratulations on an incredible coaching career at 2 amazing clubs, and you'll be remembered at both as someone who moved the needle.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ganga.
Paul Ruse down there with Michael Roberts, yeah. Always been a star. Bristol, I know you've kept an eye on sports science. It's been something that's a bugbear of yours throughout the year. You've, on the Saturday, Rub's gone a couple of times pretty heavily. Something else has just caught your attention.
It's not that I don't like the sports science guys. I love what they bring to the game. They're really good at what they do.
Don't soften it now, Bristol. No, and don't.
You don't like them, bro.
Okay. So what I'm actually saying is they're really good at their job. I just don't like their job overtaking our game. That's where I despise it. It was interesting to hear overnight Matty Hayden in relation to Smith, who's been sent home from Sri Lanka, have a similar view. Have a listen to this. Matty Hayden.
high performance tends to dominate the decisions that get made at the pointy end of the stick. Mm. Now, in cricket, you, as a captain, are the person that is the go-to that needs to stand up and be responsible for your actions, be responsible for your team. But what I'm seeing a lot more of more recently is that the coach and the high-performance sector is controlling a lot of the decisions. Mate, since when has the fact that you can sit on a force plate test and test a little down on your response then resonate with selectors? They then go, well, he's not, you know, jumping 140 kilos, so therefore he's out. I mean, that is just absolute horseshit, all of that stuff.
That's Matty Hayden there, similar
always,
thoughts.
Always been pretty forthright, yeah. Ados.
And it's that was, by the way, Dead Set Legends this morning with Howie and Fev. And also it's linked to what Chris Judd had to say yesterday. I believe it was just a sporty or a lunch or something where he said at the forum in which he said it, but he said that we need to shorten the quarters in football. I'm not so sure we need to take value off the supporters by shortening the quarters in football. I wonder whether we could say to, you know, where the sports science comes in, hey, can we lessen their impact before Christmas or before the 1st of December? In other words, no one trains until the 1st of December. Or, if you want to have shorter quarters, let's say that no quarter can run more than 30 minutes. Unless there's a stretcher case, obviously the clock stops.
There's going to be issues with that, Bertie. I think you need to really tighten down and be very clear on what is allowed time within a game, because we see games decided in the last 8 seconds. And if we're going to remove certain seconds from certain parts of games just because you want to shorten it, I'm not sure that's right. I think we need to get it back to 7.5 minutes as a starting point maybe or whatever. But
I don't think we need to shorten the quarters either, no. But I think if he's worried about it, if Juddy was doing it on the proviso that we need less wear and tear on the players, which is the forum in which he said it, I would say less wear and tear on the players would be let's get rid of the pre-Christmas stuff and not have them run those Ks that they do in that period of time.
Well, Geelong in 2011 basically did that, didn't they? That was their amazing turnaround year where the coach and Gary Ablett took off after the 2010 season. Not many of their senior players did anything of a significant spud until before January. Christmas, and they came back early to mid-January and won a premiership.
It's got to be good, and this is where sports science won't let you rest. I think it would be great for the game for those players to come back fresh and ready to go. You know, and let's face it, footy starts in, what is it, end of Feb these days anyway. So
we've got the longest pre-season in any world sport. It's become a bit of a joke, really.
That is where the wear and tear on players is, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I would also, and I don't even know who they are now, Bristol, but I'd also say to the sports science people attached to the Australian cricket team, maybe focus less on Steve Smith and a little more on getting Pat Cummins to play a game in the next 5 years. Yeah. Or Jimmy Pattinson to be able to string more than three in a row.
Exactly.
Or Nathan Coulton-Isle. Yeah. I mean, they get so wound up in areas that actually don't impact. Mitch Stark keeps missing games of cricket. It staggers me how injured our fast bowlers are, and yet we just continue to let it happen. In the Triple M box at the MCG is the CEO of the AFL, Gil McLachlan. Welcome to you.
Hey, JB.
Didn't feel like driving down the freeway to be here in person?
Well, I'm here with the people who are broadcasting the game at the MCG. I'm here in the box. I've just done SEN and others, and you know, I'm here at the MCG with about 4,000 people at the moment, by the look of it.
So you're ready to be asked some proper questions?
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I bet you are. How was Rio, by the way? I know you just slipped off for a week. How was that? Did you enjoy it?
It's been... I had a very good time, met some interesting people, got to know Rio. I'm now quarantined at home in another room because of the threat of Zika, which is a huge upside for my wife that she could have an excuse to lock me somewhere else.
Yeah. Hey, let's get straight to the elephant in the room, if you like, the bye. Lots of people are questioning whether it was a good idea from the AFL to schedule it in the first place, the week before the finals. If I throw the lasso of truth around you as the boss, are you honestly thinking it's a good idea?
Let's just wait and see how we go. I mean, I'm not sure how we can comment any other way. There is a risk, clearly, and we said this all the time, about a lack of momentum, but, your football club was one of the reasons we brought this in because of the integrity challenges of last year, and we couldn't find another way to solve it. We also think there's huge upside in having now 10 days, and let's say we start the finals in Thursday next week, so it'll be about 10 days, and we can actually celebrate the teams that, after years of work in some cases, have made finals. We can celebrate the All-Australian properly, and we have a bit of time to talk about and lead into the final series. So let's just have a look, I reckon, before we make a decision whether it's good or bad.
Good. Just before we leave that particular issue, there was a school of thought, it was a strong school of thought, that the Adelaide Crows were going to play Geelong in that first final on that Thursday, had the game gone Adelaide's way last night, and if Geelong wins today. That won't happen on the back of last night's result. So what does that leave you, option-wise, for that Thursday possibility now?
I don't know. The simple answer, Damo, is if you can tell me who's going to win these next five games, I'll be able to tell you. What I would say is, we'd like to play Thursday night. We think we could play West Coast. If it came, it was West Coast North, we could play that out of Perth on a Thursday night. We think we still could play, depending on what happens, if Adelaide got a home final, depending on the results, we still think we could play an Adelaide final out of there, and they're most likely to play... They're actually most likely to play North, and it'd be West Coast Bulldogs. And we think if it was Sydney-Adelaide, you could play that out of the SCG on a Thursday night. So those three scenarios would still be able to be played on a Thursday night.
But you'd rather be out of Melbourne? Is that what we take out of that? Is that fair to
say? No, I think those three markets are the right ones to be playing in a Thursday night final.
Okay. Gil, the Southeast Queensland corner is a very problematic one for the AFL right now. Initially, Brisbane Lions throughout the course of 2016 has been the reason that's a problem, but we now know, and it's very real too, that arguably the bigger problem is the expansion team down the highway a little bit. What are you doing about this, and how much of a worry is it for you to have these two teams in this crucial part of the AFL competition struggling so badly to the point of catastrophe?
Well, I don't know that they're that. I mean, they're clearly having a tough time, Damo. Gold Coast have got a great squad, but have been decimated by injury for 2 years. They've learned today, you know, Mira's going to leave, and there's speculation about Prestia. But they've got six picks in the top 27 before you get any picks for Mira, and I don't know what happens with Prestia. But so I just think that they just have to be calm and dispassionate and use the system and make some make the right calls through this period, because they actually have a really good list. I mean, injury aside, and if you know, if those players were all saying we're staying, that you'd go, well, they've got a great list. And the fact that if O'Meara is going to leave, you just got to make sure you use the system.
But when they've got to be calm and dispassionate, that is not what Tony Cochran is being when it comes to O'Meara. The threats he made on regular outlets on Thursday night is not a calm and dispassionate man. Are you, as CEO of the competition and a man who's very keen to see this part of the AFL competition succeed, are you comfortable with his handling of that matter?
I am. Well, I'm very comfortable with Tony Cochran as chairman of the Gold Coast Owners, an experienced guy who, you know, will make a great contribution to that footy club. But he and I, you know, we will, I'm sure, have discussions about this. I know this system, how this system works, and then you've got to work through it calmly and dispassionately. And, you know, history says you can, every time a player wants to leave, you can win out of every trade situation if you have that mindset. And I'm sure we'll have a conversation with Tony at some point.
I'll just ask one more on this, Gil, and then the other guys can ask their topics. But with that area of the competition, the Southeast Queensland corner, there appears now there to be enough evidence to suggest that players do not want to stay there, that the clubs are having real difficulties retaining whatever players they've got, good, bad or indifferent players. So what do you do, though, as a competition? How do you make that more appealing to the people?
I don't subscribe to that theory, Damo. I'm strongly of the view that the job of all football clubs, wherever they are, is to play, have the right people in the right spots in a great environment where players want to stay. Then, understand that at various points, for different reasons, players will want to change clubs. I think the greatest example, and doesn't mean you're a lesser football club, and you can win if you deal the right way. The Adelaide Football Club has lost more players than any other club in the competition in the last eight or so years, and very good players.
It's an AFL state, though, Gil. The area we're talking about isn't.
Yeah, but I'm not sure how that makes any difference, Damo, in terms of they play by the same rules. So the same draft rules and the same trade rules apply. And you create the right environment for those to stay. And by the way, Gold Coast have re-signed, you know, Lynch and Day this year and others. Brisbane have re-signed pretty much their entire list this year. And then, that's the job, primary one. Then if and when players want to leave, and O'Meara is one player who said he wants to leave the Gold Coast, then you do the best deal you can. And that
challenge applies for every club. I just don't see Queensland different to the rest of Australia.
Now, Gil, we have a little bit of trouble handling our own man here, Spud Frawley. He's a bit up and down with his performances. You're the chairman of the All-Australian Committee. You're a non-voting chairman, I believe, so Spud told me.
I put a press release out saying that.
What's he like in the environment of all the big heads in there banging and trying to pick this best team in Australia? How's he handle it all?
Well, like they all do, and I thank them for an extraordinary amount of time and contribution from these guys. Spud is someone who gets to pick the back line, and everyone just sort of caucuses around that. He's a back line leader.
Right.
Then when you get late, it can get a little tense, and it did then the last meeting, and everyone makes their plays for their sort of favourites or things people are very wedded to, and everyone has one or two, and Spud had one or two this year. And, then it's a sort of bit of a street fight at the end.
Is he a bit inconsistent?
I can't tell you how he went. he makes an on and off field contribution around the table. He's good fun and knowledgeable, and we're pleased to have him.
I'll put it to you, Gil, that you reckon he's half a crackpot.
Come on, Gil. Don't
I think he's
that.
The opposite of that. No, Spud was a good, I think you would agree with Spud, a good atmosphere around the group. Everyone had their say, and in the end came together well, and Spud made his bigger contribution as anyone.
No, Gil did a very good job late. I think he's alluded to the fact that there is a few egos in there, and he had to sort of, not separate a few, but just sort of say, boys, we just need to move on. It went a bit longer than we thought, but we're all very passionate about it.
The last two or three slots are incredibly hard, aren't they?
No, they are. The 23rd spot especially.
We'll look forward to the announcement of that. Just one other one, Gil, just quickly. Any news on Etihad Stadium? Is that in terms of the purchase of Etihad Stadium? Has it got any closer?
As I said, BT, I've got a pretty standard response. This will buy it at the right price. Everyone knows that. So whether we can ever get to that situation, time will tell.
What's keeping you up at night at the minute? What needs fixing? What aren't you happy with?
That's a good question. I mean, I'll answer it slightly differently. I want 18 clubs finishing 11-11. We want community football growing strongly. And we want a great game, well attended. Now, I think we're going pretty well generally, but there's still a couple of outlier clubs. Damo's referenced, and I'd love Brisbane to be going better than they've been. We were world record pace for attendances late in the year, but then there's a couple of clubs have slid off. At community level, we're growing, but we'd like to be growing stronger. And there's pockets. We've got challenges in certain regions. So there's bits, JB, but there's nothing that I'd say specifically is one thing that's keeping me up. We've just got a lot of work to do. We are committed to an agenda. I mean, we've got a couple of big deals to do with the Players Association, the club distribution deals, but we'll get there on all that. So it's just, there's lots to do. We're working hard. We're trying to, this game's about our supporters and our community and our clubs and our players, and we're working hard to make sure they're all happy.
We'd like to think after 20-plus years of ratings dominance and bringing, a style of broadcast to the radio that no one's ever heard or seen. And
we have a job at the moment.
Young people 50 and under have suddenly come to radio football because they don't even have an AM on their dial. So of all the heavy lifting we've done for you over the journey, Gil, we'd like to think there'd be just a little meat on the bone for us with the negotiations that are going on.
So when's your contract up?
My personal one or the...
my personal one.
Yours.
Up this year, we all are, of course, waiting for you to decide.
Has everyone got flexibility in that box?
I imagine. We're sitting with bated breath waiting for you to make the call you need to make.
Put some food on the table.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what I said to all of you when you've rung me individually in this week. We all know Tuesday.
All right. Very nice. Enjoy the rest of your day. Good luck with everything coming up in September for the AFL.
Bye, boys. Thanks very much.
Time to get our teeth into a bit of news around footy, Damo. We look to you for that. Gubby Allen about to become the head of footy at Collingwood after being recruited away from GWS. Firstly, with a role with the new women's team, although, as we said last night, I don't think there's a single person in football who ever thought that was going to be the permanent role he took at the Collingwood Football Club.
No, not when he left GWS at the start of this year, Jim, and not after the conspiracy theories that abounded last year about Adam Treloar going from GWS, where Gubby was at, to Collingwood. Now, just to deal with those before we delve into what happens next, is I've looked into that conspiracy theory like absolutely everyone else in the media, Jim, and ultimately what happened, BT, was that the Collingwood deal was actually the best deal for GWS. So I'm... as much as I'd like to think, you know, as a journo, there might have been something in that story, I don't think there was. But back to your point, Jim, in terms of Gubby going into the Collingwood department, so to speak, we all knew what was going to happen. It became official, I believe, late last week when Neil Barham and others at Collingwood were told. It's not a popular decision within the footy club. As we said on Thursday night on the footy show, Neil Barham will be beneath Gubby Allen in this arrangement, and it's now up to Neil Barham whether he wants to stay. He's going to be moved away, as far as I can tell, from the operational side of football. It's going to be a coaching role, and one, BT, that I don't think has a lot to do with what actually goes on with the team itself each week. So,
and I think his skills are management more than coaching.
Yep. So that's yet to play out. I mean, Derek Hine, who I think's been a very, very good recruiter, he, as we speak, is still there. Again, whether he wants to stay there, there is, I suppose, an interest for him from other footy clubs who want to bolster their recruiting. There's a fair bit to play out with this. They're not, I won't say, they're not jumping up and down internally at Collingwood over this situation, but that's what Gubby does. He's got a track record that has success behind it. Even his time at GWS, what we're seeing now going into the finals was his work. It was obviously other people's work around the scenes, Stephen Silvani and others, but ultimately he signed off on the deals that were done to get the quality of player in, and he's a good operator, a very good operator, but he's going to cause some carnage internally.
All right, we move on from that to the Brisbane Lions. Justin Lepich, is he going to be there next year as the coach? This is what Lepper had to say earlier in the week.
It could be. Everyone knows that. But no, I'm not thinking about it like that. That's for sure. So to me, it's out there to go and beat the Saints, and we've had a couple of good weeks. Continue on that path.
That's whether he was asked whether he will be there next week, next year, or if, in fact, this will be his last game. Interesting. Purple Big Source, Daniel Merritt, spoke to us on the Rush Hour during the week, and Bill asked him whether he thought that Lepper would be the coach there next year. Here's his answer.
Lepper, is he the right coach for Brisbane next year, mate?
Mate, he's contracted, and I think what we need is probably stability at this stage. But, yeah, who knows how that's going to play out. The board caught up, and, yeah, now it's their decision.
Not exactly an emphatic support of
quite.
It wasn't, Lepper. Was it?
It's quite interesting with that, Warrior, that when he said that he's contracted, I don't think that's a glowing endorsement from Soares. I think if he had his time again, he would have said it a little bit differently, because he was just talking like a board member then.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter, does it, with him? He's not there anyway. He's retired.
No, I know,
but,
exactly.
Yeah, which probably gives him more license to say what he felt. The situation with Lepper will be determined, I believe, by midweek. And when I say determined, I've had the view, Jim, as you know, for a fair while now, that he will not be there beyond this season. And they did meet as a board. It was an extraordinary meeting by way of having presentations from the, not just captain, but leadership group and all facets of the club. They were very keen, I believe, to not make any form of decision. And if they did make a decision, to not make it public until after this round of footy.
You can only go on what you hear, but obviously the leadership group and the captain, that to me seems to be a bit of an issue in itself with Tom Rockliffe. And I know that he's actually been a bit of a thorn in a lot of people's sides, unfortunately.
Yeah, he has. He's,
whether it's right or wrong, but that's all you hear.
For 2 years in a row, he's caused problems with teammates. And look, he feels he's doing the right thing. He's a divisive character. He was initially encouraged to be divisive. And I say divisive, everyone's got a different definition of divisive. There were certain people at that footy club, Justin Lepich included, who were happy for him to rub up teammates the wrong way. It's gone too far. He himself is now regretful of some of that.
And I would have thought it's dangerous to be anything you're not.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think he is naturally that way, by the way. He does challenge people, but initially he was doing it for Justin Lepich reasons. I think he was doing it for his own reasons maybe this year, and I just think he's been in an awkward situation. I do have a bit of sympathy for him, but I don't see him being captain under the new arrangement. I think he's had it now, and he's not up to it. In a club that's struggling, and I don't know who would be, by the way. The other issue of the week, and the big one, Jim, was the North Melbourne situation, the phasing out of four grand footballers, and obviously Drew Petrie, Michael Ferrito, Nick Del Santo were three of the four. The main one, obviously, is Brent Harvey. North Melbourne plays GWS tonight. Do you have a feel for what the feeling will be by way of support group at North Melbourne in this game tonight.
As in within the playing group playing the
game? No, more the supporters from the feedback you've got.
No, I don't. I think Drewy handled it really well yesterday when he spoke. He said, look, I don't think that's a path we ever need to go down. In fact, he said he'd be really disappointed if any of that were to occur, and so would I. As for the team, well, Luke McDonald and Sean Higgins come back in, which are really big ins because they've been badly missed, both of them. How well they'll go remains to be seen, but you know, we do need to get our best players back out there if we're to be any chance throughout September.
Well, they've got a practice game to get some form under their belt before the final, so it's good news.
Jim and I have spoken about this on off air regularly throughout the course of the week, guys. I haven't heard your view, BT, or yours, Spud, and let's just focus, if we can, on the most emotional part of it, the Brent Harvey situation.
Yeah, look, I think the criteria for anyone at a footy club is to, one, look after your icons, and I'd say you're playing champions. And the other thing, protect the brand of the coach. And as I said, I've sat back and watched it. Regardless of the decisions were made, I take that out. But a senior coach has got a myriad of things to do. And they also get dragged into list management meetings probably once a couple of weeks or every month or bi-weekly. To me, the club's let Brad Scott down on this one. He had to front the media on his own. I think the list management strategy, whatever that is, it should have been down. The process is in place. This is how we're going to do it, and I know that they were flushed out by certain players and
scenarios.
Scenarios, but still, they should have had all those scenarios down pat. This is what we need to do, because the brand of a senior coach is very, very important. He is the strong person of the club, and Brad did an outstanding job during the week, and I just think he copped too many bullets himself. I think the list manager and the football department have let Brad down on this one, and I know Brad won't say that, but being in that seat, I looked at Brad and thought, no, he hasn't been helped at all through this, because this is a big topic. Regardless of the decisions, I'm just talking about the way it was manufactured and the way it was portrayed, Brad was let down by the North Melbourne Footy Club.
For me, correct decisions on all four.
Yeah, I've got no issue with that.
Just probably wrong timing on maybe one of them, and that's, you know...
Timing of announcement?
Yeah, I would have said, and I know you... Brad's come out and said, you know, the players want to be honest, and that's all you want as a player, for a coach to be honest. But I would have just played the line of, even if I'd known, look, we'll make that decision when we're out of action, and therefore there is no chance. Now, I'm not saying it has disrupted any chance of North Melbourne's finals, but there is no chance that it will disrupt the finals if the whole world doesn't know about it. So, well, for me, that. The other one is just on Brent Harvey, like, you know, Brent's come out and said, well, he's told Brad Scott he wanted to get the family there in the last game in Melbourne and all that sort of. Come on, Brent. Mate, you've had 400, you've had 426, you've had 427, you've had mate, you've had enough of those. That's absolute nonsense. The club's got to come first in that situation. And so I say correct decision on all four players, maybe question mark on the timing.
Well, Brian, your first point, I just want to back over that again, because Brad's paid to coach, and we look at salaries of footy staff, we look at list managers and footy ops. They're there to take the pressure off the coach, and they have put undue pressure on Brad through this. And as I said, from my point of view, just looking from afar, there was far too much heat on Brad Scott. Yes, he had to make the decision, but we spend thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to take the pressure off the coach in list management, and the way the club portrays these scenarios.
But Spud, if you ask the four players to front up at a presser with him and they refuse, what do you do?
No, I understand that. I understand that.
What's your alternative?
Well, my
then?
Alternative is probably 6 weeks ago this should have been addressed. And
but you know as well as anyone, because you've been there, Spud, things are rolling affairs. They're not cut and dried at any stage. That's why you wait to the end of the year to deal with your 30-pluses.
It's not the end of the year, though, Jim. There's still a final series.
No, I agree with that,
but it was brought forward because of Brent and his manager.
Well, I agree with that.
It wasn't a club decision.
I know that.
But I would have just made the decision on him then, JB, and not the others.
Well, I would have still had scenario A, B, C, D, and E done and dusted 6 or 7 weeks ago. Whatever the ramifications, this is the way we need to roll it out, and probably just let their management know that this is what's going on.
These sort of players, there's just no easy way of dealing with players at their end of their career.
There's not.
It's just very few that
there's a better way than the North way of this week, though.
Yeah, but what is it, Damo? This is where I get annoyed with you, because you know all of the truth, and I've said to you, Now that you know the truth, what's a better way? And you go, oh, I can't come up with one other than
not,
to wait to the end of the year.
That's not true at all, Jim. We've had this conversation last night. Well, you've waited till round 23.
Yeah, but you can't wait to the end of the year because then
you have waited till the end of the year.
No, no. You can't wait till we lose, hopefully win the grand final, but lose a final, then have him walk off without anyone knowing.
Okay, Jim.
And
you
then
want
everyone
to delve into
says,
this?
Okay. Then everyone says, how can you treat the greatest game player in the history of the game like that by him not knowing, walking off without any fanfare, and then in an exit meeting you tell him he's finished?
But no.
Everyone would say that is a disgraceful way to treat Brent Harvey.
Brent Harvey.
So we were never going to do that.
Brent Harvey wanted to know the answer to that question for the last 6 weeks. So why does he get told before round 23? What's changed between round 18 and round 23?
Because, Damo, he hasn't fronted the coach the way he did on Tuesday and said, right, I'm not leaving this room until you tell me.
Because he wants an absolute final answer in round 23, he gets it, but not when he wants it in round 18.
Because, mate, you'd say to them, we will get to it when the time is right. And the time is right at the end of the year. Now, he was not happy to get to the end of the year. He wanted it brought forward. So we said, okay, if you need to know, mate, here it is.
Dude, you've waited till round 23. Why not wait until the finality of the season
because
itself?
Because I've just given you the answer. He can't walk off a ground, no one knowing if he's finished, mate, and then be told.
You were going to finish eighth 5 weeks ago, four weeks ago. So
did you hear what I just said? You're happy for him to walk off a ground at the end of a losing final and say, right, I will tell you in an exit meeting. But you're happy for that to be the last time Brent Harvey leaves the ground.
Why do you not tell him in round 19?
No, answer that question. Are you happy for that?
Well, Jim, you've waited to the end of the year.
Answer the question. Are you happy for him to walk off a ground in a losing final with no one knowing if he's finished
in
or
a losing final,
and then be told
the
in
finals,
an exit meeting?
It's not about the final. It's about round 23.
No.
Damo, what about this?
Don't avoid the question, mate. Are you happy for Brent Harvey?
You know what? He's had 21 years,
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right, I don't think it is okay.
What about this? I think this is, if he'd come in and demanded an answer, then I probably would have given him the answer, but I would have only given it to him. I wouldn't have given the other three guys. I would have just said, okay, that's fair enough. You're the game's champion. You're the man. We need to respect that. You want to know, we're going
to
know.
I think Nick Delsano wanted to know BT as well.
But I wouldn't have risked the other guys because you can tell one player and he can cope with it and the others can get around him. Mm. Tell three or four and it has the potential to explode the club.
Yeah. Look, Nick Delsano, as far as I know, wanted to know like Brent did, and I believe the other two were sort of lumped in with the ultimate decision, which again, is the club's right. I would have thought so.
Yeah, but look, Nathan Buckley. That is the issue.
I'm guaranteeing you, if we'd have done that to Brent Harvey, all hell would have broken loose.
Yeah,
people would have said that is a disgraceful way to treat a legend of your club. Telling him in an exit meeting after you've finished your season is not acceptable.
But this decision was coming for so long.
But it doesn't matter.
The scenario should have been put.
You needed to plan. As I said last night, and I know we're getting wound up here, and I'm sorry, Luke, for going over, but this decision is the actual decision itself is only part of it. The telling and the narrative around it, and you can control that as a footy club to a point. You can't control it when you handle it the way that the finality of Brent Harvey being told his career is finished effectively on the Tuesday, that needs to be thought out long before that meeting is held.
That was my point.
The presentation of this to the public and by extension the members.
But it can't wait to the end of the year, like your scenario is. You're saying the best scenario is to leave it to the end of the year. That can't happen.
Well, it's worse. In my view, it's worse to leave it till round 23 and then tell him than leading it.
Isn't it a team sport though, JB? Isn't it a team game? I respect Brent Harvey, but isn't winning finals more important than an individual?
Of course it is, Spud. But you know the truth around that. The Cats go into this game without Scott Selwood, who's come back into the side, played 5 games and was really starting to get his footy moving nicely, but he misses today. He's down on the boundary with Mickey Roberts. Robbo?
JB, he's got a tight right hammy. He did it through training this week, so unfortunately you're out, Scotty, but great challenge to be playing Melbourne down here. They're in reasonable form. How do you rate Geelong now, considering that the coach, Chris, has actually had a bit of a go at you, not finishing off recent games?
Yeah, we're really aware of what Melbourne's like. And, I mean, besides a hiccup last week, they've obviously beaten some really good teams throughout the year. So we're expecting to play their best today. And it's a great challenge for us going into finals. And Chris Scott has laid it down a little bit to... it's not so much finishing off games, it's just playing consistent footy. So we can only control what we can control. And we think our best is good enough to beat any team. But, hopefully we can just put together a more of a four-quarter effort today.
So, Scotty, just a little interruption for you, as Robbo just said. So you'll come back into the side. Is your niche in this side going to be, as you've done over the last few weeks, a run-with player?
I think so, mate. Yeah, I didn't even know Sol to go quick enough to get tight hamstrings, to be honest with you, but turns out we can. I think that's the idea. I think today It would have been nice to just get a bit of continuity and get to know the team even more. And each week I get out there, I feel as though I grow with the team. So play that sort of role, and I think we can free Cam Guthrie up a little bit more. And when the ball's in his hands, I think we're a lot more safer with it in his hands and mine, to be honest with you.
Scotty, you play with a lot of players over at West Coast. Corey Enright's a player that I just marvel at his age. He's still holding this back line together, even in the twilight of his career.
He's brilliant, mate. Even around the club, he's a massive leader for the footy club and why it's done so well. And I think you do marvel at it from the outside, but once you get inside, you respect him even more for what he does and how much he helps out the younger guys and the other guys around him. And he just wants a club to do well. It's never about him or about the. It's always about the team. So he's such an impressive guy, and I'd love to have him around for at least another 12 months.
And you talk about courage. 10 years nearly to the day. Tom Lonergan nearly lost his life, lost a kidney. So I know that, you know, he's courageous, he'll do all the right things, but it's still a big effort, isn't it? It must be in the back of his mind.
It is, and for a lot of the young guys at the club, they didn't really know what had happened to Tom. Like, they sort of briefly knew of his story, but not the actual, the whole story. So we went into it a little bit the other day, and you see the boys out there today with the shoelaces on, representing the Red Cross and giving blood, and it's a pretty phenomenal story. And to think that he did nearly lose his life, and lucky there was enough blood on hand to help him out, and it is an incredible story, and he's pretty incredible what he's doing out there at the moment.
Scott, just back on to yourself, given how much footy you missed in the latter parts of 2015 and then the struggles you'd had this year, were you surprised at how well you gelled with this new team in the three games you'd played?
Not really, mate. I mean, I did a fair bit of work with the coaches to make sure I knew my role and understood my role pretty clearly, so it was pretty easy coming in, and I trained with a fair bit of continuity. I think we could have come back a little bit earlier, but in saying that, though, we just wanted to get it right and have no more hiccups, and at least this time I'm missing with, not with the angle, it's actually with something else. So I feel really confident within the group and when I play, and hopefully I can get back in there for finals.
We hope you can too. Thanks very much for jumping on the microphone, Scotty. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, guys.
Scott Silwood down there with Mickey Roberts. Rubbo.
Yeah, Rubbo.
Now, we've got a couple of tweets here. Very icy in the box, Brian. Icy cold box here.
Oh, no, it's still not.
It's about the fifth time Damo and I've had this argument.
No, you should hear some of the stuff we've been saying to each other off air, Spud.
They said All-Australian night, Brad Scott and JB versus Warrior in the toilets at the All-Australian night on Thursday night.
Well, one of them worries me, Spud.
I'm not actually one of them going to the All-Australian.
You're not going?
Well, we're on the footy shows on here that night, Spud, so I'm not going to be there.
I'm not going either, am I?
No, you'll be going.
Well, I can't. If it's Thursday.
No, you need to go there.
The All-Australian Brad wants to eyeball it. It's just a bit of a lowbrow thing as far as I'm concerned. Oh. But it's you selectors get all wrapped up in yourselves over there about your All-Australian thing. But
so yeah.
You're standing next to a bloke.
But no credence in the year, has it, Brian?
No, it's got importance. But in terms of a night, let it go.
You're standing next to a bloke who made six or seven of them.
Because you didn't get in one?
Well, I got him one. Yeah, I got him one.
Well, the guy next to you got in about eight.
Yeah, I know. The duck did. But that's all right. You know, we just don't want to go to those nights. So move on.
Did you get in one spot? Do you select the teams?
About three. When? I was captain 1 year.
About three or three?
About three.
Or maybe if we check
three.
It.
About three.
Is that
how
about?
How many, Spud?
Can we check this?
Is that about? Because you were in the All-Australian team. Oh, were you in, Spud?
Is that about vice
were you ever captain?
I'm not taking that as fact
captain.
Either.
Were you ever captain,
no,
Spud?
No, I didn't say that.
I'm going to check this.
I think you did. Roll the tape. Here
no,
we go.
I didn't. I said vice captain.
You did. You said I was in three. And
I didn't say captain.
Might have captain one.
So yeah, what we're hearing, is there's only one team you're in.
Oh, and 1990, vice captain.
You're in the same as me, Spud.
No, vice captain of the Australian team.
So don't put yourself
but
up. Played
Ireland.
Anyway, read out a few more.
We're talking all Australians, Spud.
Oh, sorry.
A couple of glass eyes you've
no, that was
spun
about
off.
It.
So you put yourself into three when you're actually only in one, and you were never captain. Spud, what are we doing?
He's got a history, JB. You remember for 14 years he was vice captain of St Kilda's team of the century.
Spud.
14 years.
What the hell are you on about?
I got indigestion, sorry. I lost some oxygen to my brain.
I cannot believe what I've just heard. Oh. We need to get to a break. Bristle, good seeing
yeah,
you.
Good on you.
Have the rest of the afternoon off. Oh, come on, bro. Come on, Spud.
Just turned into a liar.
That's just extraordinary. Yeah, you're three, captain of one. We've hit the old Wikipedia.
Can we check
one
that one,
and
too?
Vice captain.
Can we actually check that
oh,
one?
Oh, no.
Hang on.
Wayne Carey to join us next, Dennis Committee as
hang,
well.
Hang on, JB. It's got the letters E-M-E-R next to it.
Oh, no. Spud. Shut up. The footies on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.